sent a warship through the Taiwan Strait for the first time since 2008. That, despite China's constant warning to the US and its allies over such moves. For years, the US and China have been at loggerheads over issues ranging from trade, Hong Kong and Taiwan, to the South China Sea. But ties between Beijing and Washington deteriorated sharply under former President Donald Trump. China had hoped for an improved relation under Trump's successor. But since taking office, Joe Biden has maintained pressure on China, showing no sign of discontinuing on his predecessor's hardline policies. Biden is even seeking new alliances to counter China's rising influence in the region and beyond.
This is a crisis that was said to have blown over. It was supposed to be a gradual return to full fuel tanks and drivers reassured that the very worst was behind them. Those in England's southeast continue to be hit especially hard. And despite army personnel now helping with the distribution of fuel to forecourts most in need, Business Secretary Kwasi Kwarteng denied the UK was at crisis point.
The last few days have been difficult. We've seen large queues, but I think the situation is stabilizing. We're getting petrol into the forecourts.
For consumers, the minister's words may well ring hollow.
I just think it's embarrassing that, again, we live in the UK, that we have to get the army to drive trucks. So, yeah, ridiculous. I think it's what we just get used to now, isn't it? I mean, that's just how it is. This government's terrible. Preceding governments have been just as bad. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah, this shouldn't be happening in the UK today.
You should bring in foreign help. I mean, workers from abroad who actually know how to drive lorries and to carry the fuel to the pumping stations.
UK is a very big country and very rich country and a developed country. All this mess should not be like in your life since day one. So I really don't understand all this mess, really.
It should have been business as usual at these pumps, but for many drivers, they'll be wondering whether or not their reality is being matched by the rhetoric coming out of Downing Street, and worse still, if this is a shape of things to come. The government's had to admit that one of the solutions touted to alleviate the crisis, relaxing the visa rules for experienced EU HGV drivers, has underperformed.
What we said to the road haulage industry was, fine, give us the names of the drivers that you want to bring in and we'll sort out the visas. We've got another 5,000 visas. They only produced 127 names.
The worry is that this fuel issue becomes a crisis of confidence in Britain's ability to deliver the basics for its citizens. This might leave more of a damaging legacy than the government cares to admit. Amina Taylor, London.
As the humanitarian crisis looms in Afghanistan, Yaron's new shipment of humanitarian aid to Afghan people containing tons of foodstuffs has arrived in Kabul. This round of Iranian aid was handed over by Iranian Red Crescent Society in cooperation with its Afghan partner.
The Iranian Red Crescent Society, in cooperation with the Red Crescent Society of Afghanistan, has sent the first consignment, which is including the 15 metric tons of the humanitarian consignment, mainly the food items, including the rice, canned beans, and as well as the macaronis and other sugar and other food items, which is necessary for the people in Afghanistan.
These aids are provided amid the rising hunger as a result of political crisis and the blockade of Afghans' assets by the U.S. Afghans and aid groups believe that the country wouldn't face the ongoing crisis if the U.S. had not frozen its assets.
We thank Iran and other countries who are helping Afghans these days. Our main concern is U.S. sanctions that are pushing people to unprecedented hunger and poverty. The U.S. and other countries must consider humanitarian needs and separate it from political issues. Many countries want to send money to the people of Afghanistan, but can't do that due to sanctions.
Our situation is really dire. I have lost my job and I don't receive my salary anymore. I urge international countries to help poor Afghan people who have nothing to eat these days. Some are displaced and live on the streets.
2 decades of war have left Afghanistan impoverished. The U.S.-led war in the country came to an end in August when all foreign forces left Afghanistan.
Afghanistan is faced with a multitude of crises. Health clinics are closing down, while rampant inflation is stretching people who have been left with little money and food. All that's against the backdrop of Afghanistan's frozen assets abroad. In such circumstances, assistance from the international community, especially the neighboring countries, will be a welcome relief for millions of Afghans. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
With the second shipment of Iranian fuel already making its way to most Lebanese areas, the electricity crisis has somewhat been lifted. Private generators and companies have welcomed the initiative by Hezbollah to bring in Iranian fuel through Syria.
We are buying diesel oil for a lower price. We are also buying it in Lebanese lira, and this fuel is for all sects and all religions.
Despite some criticism from foes of Hezbollah, the general response has seen the fuel as a form of humanitarian aid.
Lebanon's need for this fuel and the method with which Hezbollah distributed the fuel to all sectors and all factions in Lebanon has helped to strengthen the Lebanese society and its sovereignty. Hezbollah had been very careful not to negatively impact Lebanon in any way when it came to security and maintaining the unity of Lebanon, which is our priority. And so it was a very significant backup for Lebanon when it needed it the most.
Hezbollah Secretary General stressed previously that a bigger portion of this fuel will be distributed as donations.
This is one of the major petroleum stations in Lebanon, which was affected by the crisis. Today, it is the main distributor of Iranian fuel in the country. Several Al-Amana stations across Lebanon are responsible for the distribution of gas, either free or selling with a price cheaper than the market.
Experts believe there's more to the import of fuel from Iran than meets the eye.
This convoy of ships has proven that at any time when the Americans exit the region, there can be an alternative. And this alternative is not only military and political, it is also economic. And this is the upcoming challenge for our country and our communities. Even the U.S. and its agents have understood that the issue is not merely an issue of providing fuel, but that there is an alternative lead by the Islamic Republic of Iran in alliance and cooperation with all the countries in the region to free its economies instead of being under the U.S. hegemony.
Hezbollah has also noted that this initiative will not cover all hours of electricity, but that there needs to be reforms in the electricity sector, while some of the gasoline shortage should be met with the arrival of a third Iranian ship. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Pakistani politicians and former top civilian and military officials are in the spotlight after they were named in Pandora Papers scandal. There are as many as 700 Pakistani politicians, retired civilian and military officials whose names surfaced in the scandal. Among them also included sitting ministers and close aide to the Prime Minister Imran Khan, whose government came into power in 2018 with a pledge to end rampant corruption. Pandora Papers are based on 11.9 million documents from 14 firms, mostly in British Virgin Islands and the US, where many world leaders and top officials, including from Pakistan, hid their allegedly ill-gotten money by setting up anonymous offshore companies.
How ironic it is. Look at the sheer numbers of military generals and bureaucrats and members of current government who have been named in Pandora leak. They all are involved in this mega corruption.
Prime Minister Imran Khan has ordered an investigation into the scandal.
Although Mr. Imran Khan has been presiding over a team of these crooks and gangsters who have now been exposed in these Pandora's leaks. He has been closely working with these ministers whose names have come up. But at the same time, he would like to distance himself from these crooks and gangsters in the name of the so-called investigation that he's likely to initiate very soon.
Prime Minister Imran Khan's predecessor Nawashi was ousted from power in 2017 for possessing overseas assets beyond known means of their income after a similar scandal known as Panama Papers surfaced. Since then, many tax amnesty schemes have been introduced to legalize the hidden wealth of politicians and officials in and outside Pakistan in return of tax penalties. Therefore, many believe the corrupt elements are likely to get scot-free once again. Pandora Papers scandal is likely to die down in Pakistan given the fact that this time around, the powerful military seems to have no appetite to play its role to oust the current government, unlike in 2017 when the military fully backed the judiciary to oust the then Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif after he clashed with the army on issues linked with the foreign policy. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, has held a huge festival in the Gaza Strip to commemorate five Palestinians who were murdered in Al-Quds and the West Bank a week ago. Hundreds of Palestinians attended the festival, raising Palestinian flags and banners, hailing the Palestinian resistance and the martyrs.
These events, held in praise of our Palestinian martyrs and their families in the West Bank, those heroes prove that the rights of Palestinians are red lines. Palestinian resistance movements are gathered here stressing that we're all united in this battle against Israeli occupation, and the resistance will always be our only path to restore our rights.
Earlier, Israeli forces conducted a series of arrest raids against suspected Hamas members across the occupied West Bank, triggering clashes in which five Palestinians were killed and two Israeli soldiers were seriously wounded.
We are proud of the martyrs who lost their lives while defending Palestine. Our message to the Israeli regime is that we will continue to resist and teach the new generations to follow the footsteps of those who sacrificed everything for Palestine. The Israeli regime keeps killing and arresting our people in the West Bank on a daily basis, and these violations must be seriously dealt with.
Palestinian resistance leaders also attended the festival. In their speeches, Hamas leaders stressed that the resistance is the only option for dealing with the Israeli occupiers. They also stressed the need for promoting the spirit of resistance among new generations so they continue to fight until the rights of Palestinians are fully restored.
Palestinians here stick with resistance to restore our rights in a forceful manner, as this is the only way to defend Palestine. Those martyrs chose their path and insisted on sacrificing themselves for Palestine. Hamas stresses that we are all united in the path of resistance, and the Israeli regime must be aware that we won't give up. Our brothers in the West Bank always support us, and in return, we will defend them.
Palestinian factions here expressed their loyalty to the Palestinian martyrs who have lost their lives defending Palestine and vowed that their blood won't go in vain. They also expressed that the battle against this occupation is ongoing until complete freedom. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Assessory Appeals Court suspended a hearing regarding the extradition to Spain of former Catalan separatist leader Carles Puigdemont. The Italian judges have determined that a rule on the matter will be made after the European Court of Justice announces its verdict on Puigdemont's immunity. The politician's immunity linked to his election as a member of the European Parliament was lifted earlier this year by the EU General Court.
Catalan separatist leader Puigdemont is wanted by Madrid on charges of sedition for leading a Catalan bid to declare independence from Spain in October 2017. Separatists' short-lived declaration of independence triggered a major political crisis with Spain, during which Puigdemont and several others fled abroad.
Italy's judges have made their call, and now it's up to the European Court of Justice to make theirs. The case is also a test of judicial cooperation between European countries, which have ruled differently on the same issue.
A German court refused to extradite Puigdemont to Spain on rebellion charges in 2018, simply arguing that the Catalan leader was not punishable under German law. Some Italian lawmakers have slammed Puigdemont's arrest in Sardinia last month, saying it was a dark page in Italy's democracy.
The arrest of a politician whose only wrongdoing, in inverted commas, was organizing democratic elections is a worrying signal. If this is how we deal with forces that gather the support of millions of people against central governments, we should all be worried. The Sassari court will set a new date after the European Court of Justice decides on the immunity of Puigdemont and on the legitimacy of the Spanish judge to issue the arrest warrant. Meanwhile, Puigdemont is free to travel as he pleases. For the time being, Max Civili, Rome.
Palestinians rallied on Monday in front of the Red Cross office in Gaza in solidarity with thousands of prisoners held in Israeli jails and detention centers. The event comes as several Palestinian political prisoners continue their hunger strike to protest their inhumane conditions. Suffering of Palestinian prisoners has multiplied following last month's heroic escape of six prisoners from Gilboa, a maximum security prison in occupied northern Palestine.
Following the historic escape of several inmates from the Gilboa prison, Zionist forces have placed all Palestinian prisoners under unprecedented, deplorable conditions. Many of them have been placed under solitary confinement and were tortured over suspicion that they had helped the six prisoners. Currently, the prisoners are subjected to 60 types of punishments inside Israeli jails and detention centers, which is a clear violation of international laws and norms.
Last month alone, the Israeli regime forces arrested 350 Palestinians, including 36 children and 11 women. Rights activists say Palestinians held in Israeli jails would continue to suffer as long as the world keeps turning a blind eye to Tel Aviv's violations of their rights.
Prisoners on hunger strike are suffering as the world keeps turning a blind eye to Israeli violations against Palestinians. Some of the prisoners have been on hunger strike for more than 80 days. We call on the International Committee of the Red Cross to exert real pressure on the Israeli regime to end its systematic violation of prisoners' rights, especially women and children.
Every Monday for the last 30 years, Gazans have staged protests outside the office of the Red Cross to condemn Israel's inhumane treatment of thousands of Palestinians incarcerated in 24 Israeli jails. Palestinian prisoners resort to hunger strike to draw attention to their suffering, especially under Israel's so-called administrative detention, a policy under which people are held for an indefinite period without charge.
We are here to support Palestinians who lost their freedom while fighting for Al-Quds and for the liberation of Palestine. I call on Arabs to wake up and support the Palestinian prisoners. The prisoners need re-election to highlight their ongoing suffering inside Zionist jails.
Palestinians are calling on the international community to come out of its silence and help their loved ones who were incarcerated illegally by the Israeli regime.
Currently, there are over 500 Palestinians jailed without charge or trial under administrative detention. The Israeli regime has arrested almost 1 million Palestinians since 1967. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, sir.
Hi, Kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of internet.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to the Spotlight. I'm Kabatakwe. When it comes to the Caucasus, Iran has made its stance clear. The Islamic Republic of Iran is deeply concerned by Israel's presence in this region and will not accept a map change. Iran's foreign minister made the remarks in the presence of his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, in Moscow. Meanwhile, Iran's leader has also said that the interference of foreign actors in the region is a source of discord and damage, calling on regional states to follow the example of Iran for power and rationality. Stay tuned to the Spotlight.
Israel's divisive activities in the region have always been a matter of concern for Iran, given the regime's hostility towards the Islamic Republic over the past decades. Recently, such concerns have grown further amid Israel's ever-expanding military ties with Azerbaijan. Israel has turned into a major arms supplier to the Caucasus nation in the wake of last year's flare-up of tensions between Azerbaijan and Armenia over the Nagorno-Karabakh region. Iran sees Israel's nexus and arms deal with Baku as an attempt to establish a presence in the South Caucasus, which Tehran says will undermine regional stability and security. Iranian officials, including President Ibrahim Raisi, have warned that Tehran does not tolerate the regime's military presence in the region. Such a stance was among major topics highlighted by Iran's top diplomat during his visit to Russia.
We certainly never accept any geopolitical change and map change in the Caucasus. We have serious concerns about the presence of terrorists and Zionists in the region.
Last week, the Iranian armed forces launched a massive drill near the border with Azerbaijan to boost the country's defense and deterrent capabilities in the face of potential enemy threats. Military officials said the exercise was also a warning to Israel, a message that has been echoed by experts.
This latest exercise is very significant because it's sending out a clear message that Iran is not going to be passive. They're going to proactively be hunting and seeking out any forces which are trying to violate the stability of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Such warnings stem from Israel's hostile approaches, which include the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists and attacks on the country's nuclear facilities. Besides, Israeli officials have time and again threatened Iran with military action, a move Iran says will be met with a crushing response.
Our guest joining us for the Spotlight is Saeed Mohsen Abbas. He's a journalist and political commentator who joins us from London. Also joining us, Saeed Mustafa Khoshchesh, political analyst. I'd like to welcome you both. Let me first start with you, Saeed Mustafa Khoshchesh, and if you can quickly rewind back to a week ago where it seems that's a point where you had these military drills that were held by Iran in the northwestern border area. Tell us why Iran did that and what that situation is in the Caucasus that is a matter of concern at this point.
Hello, Kaveh, and thanks for having me. Well, it all started last year. We hoped that, Azerbaijan would suffice to take him back Karabakh. But in a final deal, it was mentioned that there would be an exchange of corridors for Armenia and also Azerbaijan in southern Armenia. They would be given an economic corridor in order to be connected to their Nakhchivan region. But gradually, they were provoked by Israel. That's looking very much, as your report said, for escalating tensions between Iran and its neighbors as part of its plot against Iran to weaken Iran, to open up a corridor to capture and occupy southern Armenian territory in order to be linked to Nakhchivan and then to Turkey. And then, this is also pursued by the neo-Ottoman ambitious plans of Mr. Erdogan to open up such a corridor to go through Azerbaijan to the Caspian Sea, and then from there to Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, to Western China. There are Turkish territories. Different kinds of ethnic Turks live in there. So they meant to open up such a territory. That would inflict much harm to Iran's not only national trade with Armenia or its link to the Eurasian territories and countries and Europe, but also to the transit, the international corridor, south-north corridor that starts outside Iran, southeast Iran, and goes through Iran to Armenia, to Eurasia, Russia, and Europe. And if such occupation happens, then Iran would have no border with Armenia. And then it's not just economic losses, huge economic losses that would be inflicted on Iran due to the rivalries, regional rivalries, that those who would occupy this territory would have with Iran, but also it would inflict a very huge geopolitical risks and threats to Iran. And it's not just Iran, but also to other regional states. Mm-hmm. Even Russians have a lot to lose if such a thing happens. So Iranians have been very much serious about standing against any such ambitious plan to capture Armenia, okay, southern Armenia, the same way that Iranians were serious about taking back Karabakh, helping Azerbaijan take back its occupied Karabakh territory.
Well, let's see here. So, say Mohsen Abbas, you have the explanation there given by, say, Mustafa Khoshchesh, and then you had Iran hold military drills, of which then it came out and said, and this is going back to the Iranian foreign minister, quote, the Islamic Republic of Iran does not tolerate the presence and activities of the Zionist regime against its national security and will take any necessary action in this regard. So then you had this come out, and it took some by surprise. If you can explain to us why the Iran has made this statement, what is going on there?
Well, what the Iranian intelligence clearly has picked up quite some time ago is that after the Nagorno-Karabakh victory, essentially, for Azerbaijan, what they began to do was to allow Zionist Israeli contractors, Israeli companies, to become involved in the reconstruction of the regions that were won during this clash between the Azerbaijanis and the Armenians. Now, that is going to be an absolute red line. Everybody would know that. And the fact of the matter already is that Israeli drones are being stationed in that territory. And it's also alleged that, even more seriously, that a recent attack, a terrorist attack, on a northern nuclear installation within Iran, it's being intimated that actually it could well be such territorial, if you like, gifts which Azerbaijan is giving to its Israeli collaborators, which could be causing major problems already in terms of Islamic Republic of Iran's internal security. Of course, all these things need to be verified, and there are claims and counterclaims going on. What is a fact, though, is that Azerbaijan gets 60% of its military hardware and its arms from Israel. What is a fact is that the Azeris provide 40% of Israel's oil, supplies. There are many, many more economic ties which are there. The Azeris, by and large, have tried to keep this very much undercover up to now. They've not really openly declared their love affair with Israel. But you see, of course, Iran cannot ignore such a major, threat to its strategic safety, geostrategic safety, as to allow not only the Zionists into that territory, but also what's being alleged and is very, very likely to be true, is that the forces hitherto operating, for instance, in Syria, in Idlib, now have a direct rat run from Turkey into this region of Nagorno-Karabakh, and that, of course, means that ISIS and their sort of offshoots can embed themselves on the northern borders of Iran too. And this, of course, is yet another major threat. And I think this is why Ayatollah Khamenei, I'm going to quote, he says, those who dare under illusions of relying on others, thinking that they can provide their security, should know that they will soon receive a slap, that they will regret this. Now, that's really tough talk from the leader himself. And I think in retaliation, one of the things that we hear is that a mosque, a Husseinia in Baku, has been closed down. The Azerbaijanis now claim it's because of the coronavirus. but the office of the Ayatollah Khamenei was also evidently shut down. So there are these exchanges going on. Iran itself has shut down military airspace for Azerbaijani military aircraft across its kind of airspace. So there is a sort of a very serious amount of, if you like, warning and saber rattling going on from Iran, saying, look, there are huge red lines, and Mr. Ilham Aliyev, the president of Azerbaijan, needs to take serious note.
Yeah, when you talk about Iran's leader there and the statement that he made, say, Mohsen Abbas, let me ask you, Mostafa Khoshesh, Iran's leader has been very careful in the way that he's addressed this issue, and I'm going to take another quote where he said the interference of foreigners in the region is a source of discord and damage. All issues and incidents must be resolved without foreign interference, and the countries of the region should follow the example of Iran and the armed forces of the Islamic Republic. I'm guessing your interpretation, obviously, of Iran's leader's statement there, but I'm guessing that Iran's motto of wanting to establish and maintaining friendly relations with the countries in the region has something to do with that. And, of course, the exercises is one of the reasons why it was held, is to make sure that it maintains stability there.
That's exactly true. Iran has never invaded any country, and its war games are always meant, and even its arms program, they are meant to deter threats. And when the Iranian leader said that, he meant the growing ties that Azerbaijan has been having with Israel, as your other guest correctly mentioned. There are three issues here involved. First was the corridor that I just explained. Again, on both sides, on Azerbaijan's side and Turkey's side, you could see the foot trace of the Israeli regime provoking and inciting the two governments to go for such an ambitious plan. That would be a strategic mistake, of course. Iran, the drills show that Iran, you know, would take any such move very seriously and would step in, though war would be a last resort, and Iran has multiple more options. Yet still, if nothing works, then Iran would take immediate action. One of such options was offering Armenia to, you know, construct a new corridor that would start from Iranian borders to Yerevan for 400 kilometers. The only, you know, the first 20 kilometers of the old road that would go to the newly freed Karabakh region matters here. And Iran has offered to construct a replacement road and highway, and it's already involved in that. That means that Iran is very serious. That's sending Azerbaijan a serious message that Iran would have no hesitation to defend its interests in the region. Also, the militant groups deployed in Idlib in northwestern Syria, they've been transitioned to Karabakh region, and that's a very serious threat to Iran. And also, the Israelis have been given a very free hand recently, especially in the last few years, growingly. I mean, the Azeris have given the Israelis an air base, and they have been using, the Israelis have been using that base for as a platform to do hostile actions against Iran. They've been sending multiple drones to Iran. In many cases, they have been pushed back. They've, you know, failed in infiltrating Iranian skies. But in one, at least in one or two cases, they infiltrated Iranian territory, though the Iranian air defense was in the know. They had, you know, found out that drone was coming in. They wanted to know where it's going and what's the mission, and it was shut down. It was a Israeli Hermes drone that was sent by the Israelis to go for reconnaissance mission against Natanz. And when Iran held, protested against such a move to Azerbaijan, the Baku government claimed that they didn't know anything about it, that the Israelis had bypassed them. That means giving Israel a free hand, such a free hand that they would not even,
that's interesting,
you know, be bound to inform the Baku government. And also, many victims had infiltrated the Azerbaijan border with Iran. That's a very serious crime against Iran. in one or two cases, they have assassinated Iranian scientists. Let me give you this last example.
Okay.
Majid Jamal Faisi, who was involved in an assassination of an Iranian nuclear scientist around a decade ago, he had been given a free pass to go to Israel via Azerbaijan and for receiving training, and he got back to do the assassination, and he did it, and he martyred one of the Iranian nuclear scientists. So Iran has had many grievances. It has, you know, exhausted diplomatic, and it's now sending very serious, you know, warnings to the Baku government that enough is enough, because Baku is going to give the Israelis more, you know, room, and at least they would allow them to have two, three new military bases that would definitely be used against Iran. And there is irrefutable evidence that Baku has been inviting Israeli war strategists like Brenda Schaffer, who's a Haifa University teacher and Israeli army strategist and FDD member, who is the theoretician of radicalizing ethnic Azeri nationality in order to decompose Iran.
Yeah.
That's a very, you know, she even released the picture of her presence on the other side of Khoda Afarin Bridge on Aras River, the border river between Iran and Azerbaijan. Very proudly, she declared her presence in there.
And to give more backing to what Mustafa Khoshesh has said there, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, the Azerbaijani Defense Ministry has said that it's denied allowing another entity, in this case Israel, or even the U.S. to use this airspace. And there was information, I guess, about Russia's container radar system that detected unknown planes using Azerbaijan's airspace. Again, the Azerbaijani Defense Minister denying that. How could that be when that seems to be the case?
Well, the Azeris clearly have tested the water. They've got bold after the victory, the quite comprehensive victory, actually, and the military hardware that they used was extremely and extraordinarily accurate and powerful. Now, Turkey was involved in the supply of those weapons, Israel itself, of course, as I said. So it could be that Mr. Aliyev has got delusions beyond his station and feels that he might be able to stake a claim in certain areas within Iran, but I rather suspect it's much more a case of the issue of the corridors and all these pipelines, these railway tracks. All of this links ultimately, let's not forget, to the Belt Road Initiative, which is the major lifeline, the major economic, lifeline for countries in that region. Now, Azerbaijan sits very critically at a very critical nexus or juncture of that Belt Road Initiative, and of course the Americans, the Israelis, and such like forces wouldn't want that to be successful, especially if it involved the Islamic Republic of Iran benefiting at all. And of course, this is the crux of the issue. The Russia-China sort of strategic partnership, along with Iran and other nations, Pakistan included within that, they look for stability within this region. All of them will want stability. They'll be looking on at this situation with horror, because essentially this would give NATO and would give NATO's partners the perfect opportunity to put a spanner in the works of that part of the development, the economic development of that region. They would like nothing more than to be able to do that. So I think we're going to see a lot of behind-the-scenes involvement from the greater Eurasian partnership, as it were, to step in and to try and ensure that Azerbaijan doesn't go any further, and the legitimate concerns that the Islamic Republic of Iran has shown will be given great credence within that part of the world. And the economic factors, I think, will hopefully allow Azerbaijan to see sense, because they would profit from a sort of an equitable use of the corridors around Natchez and the various railway routes.
All right, final question quickly, if you can, say Mustafa Hoshesh. So you would guess that here logic needs to prevail. One step should be taken back, tensions to be simmered down. But that would be very hard, given some of the facts that you have said. about how, as you said, Azerbaijan being used as a base, even though the country's president and even the defense ministry says that's not the case. When will that red line be crossed, or will things get toned down? How will they get toned down, in your opinion?
Any further activity by the militants, any lack of action by Azerbaijan to take the militants back, to take the Israelis back, and any further hostile activity by Israeli regime against Iran through the Azeri territory, or any kind of effort by Azerbaijan and its allies to change geopolitical borders would trigger Iran's reaction, definitely very tough and stern reaction. Let's remember that this kind of corridor, we are not talking about an economic corridor that would be welcomed by anyone, by everyone, but we are talking about occupation of territory. If that happens, and they've coined a word for that, Turkestan, then that means Turkey would find itself on the shores of the Caspian Sea. Turkey is a NATO ally. That means the expansion and spread of NATO to territories, not just threatening Iran, but also Russians. And we all know what the Russian reaction could be to the spread and expansion of NATO. We saw it in their reaction to such efforts in Ukraine. And also the presence of militants is mainly a threat to Russia. That's why when Iran's martyred Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani convinced Putin that after establishing their presence in Syria and Iraq, that this militant groups, they would spread to Russian territories to pose threat to them, Putin was convinced to authorize military action against the militants in Syria. And then they know it pretty well. Though they are in good terms with Israel, the Russians know pretty well what kind of plans are being pursued by the Israelis to make hotbed of tensions around Iran. And this means Iran's top reaction. This means escalation of tensions and instability in the region that would be harmful to everyone, including Russia.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. Thank you for your comments, Sayyid Mustafa Hoshesh, political analyst. And Sayyid Mohsin Abbas, thank you, journalist and political commentator there from London. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitaly, the entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
People who receive two COVID-19 jabs and later contract the Delta variant are less likely to infect their close contacts than are unvaccinated people with Delta. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Smriti Malapati, researcher. This article is published under the heading COVID vaccines cut risk of transmitting Delta, but not for long. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. The first study to look directly at how well vaccines prevent the spread of the Delta variant of SARS-CoV-2 brings good news and bad. The study shows that people who become infected with the Delta variant are less likely to pass the virus to their close contacts if they have already had a COVID-19 vaccine than if they haven't. But that protective effect is relatively small and dwindles alarmingly at 3 months after the receipt of the second shot. The findings add to scientists' understanding of the vaccination's effect on curbing Delta's spread, but are both more and less encouraging, says Marm Kalprick, an infectious disease researcher at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Previous studies have found that people infected with Delta have roughly the same levels of viral genetic materials in their noses, regardless of whether they had previously been vaccinated, suggesting that vaccinated and unvaccinated people might be equally infectious. But studies also suggest that vaccinated people are less likely to spread the virus if they subsequently catch Delta. The levels of nasal virus drop faster than those of unvaccinated infected people, and their nasal swabs contain smaller amounts of infectious virus. The latest study examined the effect of vaccines on transmission more directly. It analyzed testing data from 139-164 close contacts of 91,716 people infected with SARS-CoV-2 between January and August 2021 in the UK, when the Alpha and Delta variants were competing for dominance. The authors found that although the vaccines did offer some protection against infection and onward transmission, Delta dampened that effect. A person who was fully vaccinated and then had a breakthrough Delta infection was almost twice as likely to pass on the virus as someone who was infected with Alpha. And that was on top of the higher risk of having a breakthrough infection caused by Delta than one caused by Alpha. Unfortunately, the vaccine's beneficial effect on Delta transmission waned to almost negligible levels over time. In people infected 2 weeks after receiving the vaccine developed by a pharmaceutical company both in the UK, the chance that an unvaccinated close contact would test positive was 57%, but 3 months later that chance rose to 67%. The latter figure is on par with the likelihood of an unvaccinated person will spread the virus. A reduction was also observed in people vaccinated with the jab. The risk of spreading the Delta infection soon after vaccination with that jab was 42%, but increased to 58% with time. There is a step change with Alpha versus Delta, but then there is also a change over time, says co-author David Eyre, an epidemiologist at the University of Oxford, UK. The results possibly explain why we have seen so much onward transmission of Delta, despite widespread vaccination. But the results also offer the intriguing possibility that if you do run a booster campaign because you want to protect individuals, it may also have this effect of reducing transmission, says Eyre. Booster campaigns raise a new uncertainty, says Stephen Riley, an infectious disease researcher at Imperial College London. Whether the same waning of protection from infectiousness will occur after the third dose. The study has not yet been peer-reviewed.
Good morning!
comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.